any safety feature you have in your vehicle that just saved your life is the work of many safety advocates pounding for years and years and years and years. You know, things like seatbelts, things like airbags. You think, oh, well, that's the government made everyone do that. Oh, no, no, it's the safety advocates that made the government do that.
Hello, and welcome to Resilient People. I'm your host, Janet Fanacki. Resilient People features my conversations with regular, but what I like to call extraordinary people from around the world who are admired for their resilience. My guests have all overcome a major challenge, found a purpose from it, and now help others be resilient too. Resilient People started when I was spending a lot of time in a cancer center with my husband, who is living with terminal brain cancer. I wondered about the big and challenging life events that people deal with and how they manage them, and even if they use those experiences as a purpose to help others. If you're like me and get inspired by the average people who've overcome challenges and done something positive to impact others, well, then this is the show for you. I call myself a resilience explorer. I'm particularly interested in what makes people resilient, what they do differently to be that way, learn about their purpose, as well as tips and takeaways to maintain a positive mindset. How often have you found yourself sitting in your vehicle and wondering about the safety features around you? The interior trunk release, the rear safety camera, and the switch for your power windows. Honestly, I never gave them much thought until I met my guest for today's episode. Jeanette Fennell is a safety advocate. Back in 1995, an alarming and life-threatening thing happened to her and her husband, along with their 9-month-old son, in their car. This experience had Jeanette dedicate the rest of her life to advocating for car safety for children, and to create the organization Kids and Cars. She has spearheaded many legislations in the US that we can all be thankful for, all because of one fateful event in her life. Have a listen to her story and learn how Jeanette took a challenging time in her life and created a purpose to help others. Jeanette, so nice for you to join me today. How are you?
I'm doing great and very happy to be with you today.
So nice to see you. How are you coping during the last year with the pandemic?
Well, you know, like everyone else, it's been interesting. We've been working very, very hard. We're in our 25th year right now. So while we were locked up due to COVID, we've renamed our organization. We've got a new logo and we're getting ready to launch a new website. So I'd say we've been pretty busy.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on all that. Let me start by asking you about where your story began 25 years ago.
Well, what happened is we were living in San Francisco and we had a 9-month-old baby. And on Halloween weekend, we went to dinner with friends. And when we came home, before our garage door had a chance to come all the way down, two masked men with loaded guns rolled in under the door and stuck the gun at our heads and told us to get into the trunk, which, of course, seems incredibly unreal, didn't make sense. I thought they must be in the wrong garage, but they were there and decided that they were going to put us in the trunk and take us to somewhere where we could be robbed and assaulted and everything else. So that's how everything got started.
So you and your husband were put in the trunk. The car took off. You weren't sure where your baby was at this time. Is that right?
Well, we were talking to each other. I said, can you hear the baby? You know, and he said, no. But of course, we knew he was asleep when we pulled into the garage. But then I also remember the survival instinct kicking in. And, you know, you hear about people talk about that. And I had never experienced it, but that's the only thing that matters. And this adrenaline, you know, really kicks up. And that's when I started like pulling on the carpet and anything else I could find in that trunk, with the idea being, you know, maybe I could short out the lights or the backup lights or the brake lights. And then someone behind us would say, something's wrong with that car, and, you know, call the police and we could escape.
How did it all end up for you?
Well, we did survive. I'm here today talking to you. But we were taken to a secondary location where we were robbed and assaulted and basically left for dead in the trunk of our car. And there definitely was some divine intervention going on, because after they took everything from us and slammed the trunk lid down again, they said, if this isn't the right PIN number, we're going to come back and kill you. That might sound harrowing, but I found it kind of comforting, meaning they were leaving and we gave them the right PIN number. So that was, in my mind, positive news. But like I said, divine intervention, because we were in our trunk, the car wasn't running, they had the keys, they had taken everything. And yet I saw this little light where I had ripped out all the carpeting from the trunk. Now, you know, scientifically, mechanically, there's no way there could be a light in that trunk. So it had to be divine intervention. And then I said to my husband, these words came from my mouth. I'm not saying they came from my brain, but I said, I think I found the trunk release. And put his, because I was closest to the bumper, he was closest to the back seat. So I put his hands over my body and put his hands in this area. And he was able to feel around. And you know, when you're in your car and you pull that button and the trunk pops up, there is in that area a mechanism to make that happen. So he was able to find that. He pulled on the cable and the trunk went bink. I mean, it opened up just like it would open if you were inside your vehicle. So that's when we pole vaulted out of there and found out our baby was no longer with us. I mean, there was nothing in that car, not even his car seat.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine what that feeling must have been like for you too. But the cord that you're talking about, is that only something that appeared because you had torn away at some of the other components of the trunk that you were able to see that?
Yes, it is all buried underneath. In our case, it was like carpeting. Every trunk's a little bit different, but very much covered, because you know, you wouldn't want, let's say, luggage or anything you put in there to knock it or open it unexpectedly. So it was visible only because I had ripped things open.
Let's get to the baby. What happened?
Well, the lowest part of the entire situation is that our baby was no longer with us. And, you know, as a mom, you would imagine how your heart sinks. And that was, again, then the only thing that we were concerned about.
Where did he end up?
Well, the good news is he did end up outside of our home in his car seat in the middle of the night, all alone. They took him out, and I don't even feel they had enough time to do it. But between them opening the car door, I heard them say, there's a baby. And then pulling out of the garage and taking us on that journey. Somehow in those few seconds, they unclicked the car seat, you know, put him outside and took off.
Wow. How long do you think you were gone for?
An hour or two. It's just, you know, it all kind of becomes a blur. But when we did come home and we saw police officers and lights and, you know, a lot of activity going on in our garage, the police officers that brought us home pulled up, and I see him, and I see an officer holding him, and I see him playing with the officer's walkie-talkie. And that was it. That's when I broke. And I just had to grab him and take him.
Tell me about afterwards, what you did to sort of help yourself get back onto your feet mentally, physically, after that experience.
Well, one thing that was we were very blessed to have is my husband at that time worked for Levi Strauss & Company in San Francisco, and they have, you know, a wonderful program and outreach for these type of situations. And we were immediately matched with a trauma counselor. So that made all the difference in the world, I think, to us. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about something like this that's happened. But I have found that talking about it is the best way to heal. Now, that's just for me, because everybody handles grief differently. But it seemed to help, and it seemed to also lead us towards a solution. How can we prevent this from happening? Because the media just, you know, we were deluged by everyone wanting to talk to us in a story, and we really didn't want to do that. But then when we saw how it was being covered and people were saying, well, I live in this neighborhood because I thought it was safe. I'm like, you can't buy safety. Who thinks you can buy safety? And so then we did agree, as long as they worked with us to help get safety messages out to help prevent other people from having to do this. But what really, I would say, tipped me was when one of the officers said to us, you know, it never ends this way. And I'm like, oh, really? And how does it end? And, you know, they basically were saying, well, it doesn't have take too much of an imagination to know that the different steps you went through and everything that happened, it's pretty rare for people to walk away from this relatively unharmed. Mm-hmm. And this little tape in my head. And I'm like, how does it end? How does it end? And I'm kind of a, you know, can-do person. And that's how it all started, is trying to figure out, what do they mean? How does this end?
Of course, the experience in the trunk of your car led to you having this wonderful journey for the last 25 years. Why don't we talk a little bit about kids and cars?
What started when I was trying to figure out how does it end, I did a lot of research on the internet. Now, remember, this is even before Google. So this is a while ago, and I would put in search engines. I would say locked in trunk. You know, I didn't know how to further define search terms. So I'd get like 10,000 matches, and I'd read them all. And I can tell you about, you know, tree trunks. I can tell you about the trunk of your body. I can tell you about trunk shows. I can tell you about truncation, all these things. But, you know, I'd get to like 5,780, and then there would be a case. So case by case by case, I would find out what happened, put it in an Excel spreadsheet, and just kept searching for data. And, you know, some really, really bad things happen to people that are put in the trunk of a car. And I didn't put anybody in my database who was already dead when they were put in the trunk of a car, because there's, of course, pretty much of that. But I wanted only to look at what happens when someone is put in there alive. And it became pretty obvious that there needed to be a little release lever in vehicles. So if someone's put in there, they can get out. So with data in hand, I mean, I called everybody. I contacted anyone who could possibly help. I even called the FBI. And they said they didn't have the data, but if I get some, I should provide it to them because it was a good idea. And that was the big revelation, I think, that came out of all of this, is that there wasn't any data. And in our country, in this society, no data, no problem. And I did find in the 70s and earlier, there were people that suggested that trunk releases should be put in vehicles. But, you know, all the same old excuses, and the automakers didn't want to do it. And there wasn't data. So having that data really made all the difference in the world. And being very tenacious didn't hurt either.
Yeah, of course. And all that data was showing you that there was more than just you that had gone through something like this.
Yeah, it was the story, I guess, the police officer said to me that night. Not many people walk away from this relatively unharmed. And I mean, there are some cases that are unbelievable. And kind of the mode that happens is someone takes that person and quickly and quietly gets them in the trunk of the car. Then they take them to crime scene B, where they do terrible things to people. Some survive, many die. So with that in hand, we said, hey, just like refrigerators in the old days, or different things that you could get in and couldn't get out of, they changed. So instead of having refrigerators with a clasp around them, because kids would get in and then they would die, we made a rule that said refrigerators have to be escapable. And guess what? You don't hear kids dying in refrigerators anymore. And so that was kind of the concept, or the, let's say, thought process that we followed. And then with a tremendous amount of research, with a tremendous amount of time and effort, we were actually able to get a federal regulation such that now all vehicles, it doesn't matter where in the world they're made, but if they're sold or leased here in the United States, they're going to come with this little glow-in-the-dark truck release. And obviously, we're very, very excited about that. So any vehicle 2002 or newer has that glow-in-the-dark trunk release. But the best news about the entire story is that not one person, we've not been able to document, one person has died in the trunk of a car that has that little glow-in-the-dark release. I think that's the best part of the whole story.
How gratifying is that for you?
Well, we thought in doing this, you know, we would bring the numbers down and that they would be reduced. The fact that they went to zero was far exceeding any of our expectations. So obviously we're very happy and hopefully that trend will last forever.
Your organization does more than just focus on trunks. It's safety in and around vehicles.
Absolutely. What happened is while I was working on this, people would call us and say, oh, you really should do some work on kids knocking cars into gear, or you really should work on kids being strangled by power windows because that's a big problem. And I'm like, hey, I just want to get in trunk releases. That's all I wanted to do. But of course, knowing that I had the answer to how those things could be corrected, if I didn't do anything about it, I would be part of the problem. So that's when this whole area of non-traffic incidents was brought to light. And that's really how kidsandcars.org was founded.
Oh, I think that's amazing. You found your purpose, didn't you?
I guess I did. I had previously, you know, worked in industry and was in sales and marketing. And I was sometimes, because I'm in the injury prevention world right now, people say, you know, you really should go back and get your master's of public health. And I said, well, I think I've kind of figured out how to get this stuff done. And it's sort of like sales and marketing, because as soon as someone says no, then you got to figure out how you can change that no into a yes. So I say, if you go get your marketing degree, then I'll go back and get a master's in public health.
I'm curious to know where your resilience comes from. Like, where do you think your positive mindset stems from in this can-do attitude?
I think it's, you know, something I grew up in Wisconsin, had a good work ethic, and always is motivated. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it absolutely the best that I can. And I don't see myself as a victim. And that's unfortunately how many people are portrayed at times, that they're the victim. Yes, this happened. It was terrible. We were so blessed to have good support. You know, our church rallied around us and we were saved. But I actually felt like, and I know people think this is crazy, but I felt like I got a fax from God. And he said, hey, I've given you intelligence, I've given you the wherewithal, and I've saved your family's life. Now you get out there and start giving back and helping others. And I'm like, okay. I know, talking with one of my ministers, she said, people, you know, always talk about different ways they speak with the Lord, but no one's ever said they got a fax.
Is that because it happened at a time where faxes are still being sent?
Well, not only were they still being sent, they were that thermo paper.
Yeah. Rolls and rolls and rolls. You had to cut it yourself.
Yeah. But, you know, it was interesting when, you know, every so often, like, things would get so impossible and then like something really good would happen. I'm like, oh, thank you, Lord. You know, you promised you wouldn't make me do this all on my own. Like I said, I think there was a lot of divine intervention going on. I am very strong-willed. I am persistent. And the worst thing somebody can ever tell me is, you know, that it can't be done. And, you know, we kind of have a saying, if it can't be done, don't interrupt the person who's doing it. Okay.
I like that a lot. What's some of the feedback that you've gotten from starting Kids in Cars?
All different sorts of feedback. We've made products in this world very dangerous. We've made the environment in this world very dangerous to children. And in my own way, I want to make the environment of the vehicle and what's around it safer for children, because they don't have to be injured this way. They don't have to be strangled in power windows. They don't have to knock cars in gear and then either fall out and be run over or end up in a body of water. And, you know, one of our most recent successes is the fact that now all vehicles come with a rear view camera, because it's just like, you know, I was, I guess, naive enough, and I could step back maybe from people that had done this work all their lives. And I said, how in the world could we have been making vehicles for 100 years and there was no standard whatsoever on what we should be able to see when we're backing up? How could this be, right? It just never made sense. And trust me, it was a huge, huge, long involved fight, but it just became worse and worse because people were driving SUVs and pickup trucks, and the blind zone behind those are even bigger. You know, the way the numbers work right now is about 50 children every week in the United States are backed over. 48 of those end up in a hospital emergency room, but at least two die. And that is not an acceptable number, and it's very predictable and very preventable. So we're excited as of 2018, now all vehicles, doesn't matter where on earth they're made, but if they're sold or leased here in the United States, it will come with a rear view camera as standard equipment. You don't have to pay extra for that anymore.
Congratulations, that's phenomenal. I have a car that has one of those. I have for the last couple of cars, and I tell you, I rely on it so much. That's brilliant.
Don't you think, like, how did I ever drive without it?
Yep.
Yeah, it helps me parallel park, people say. I said, yeah, it does that, and it can save children's lives. You know, we've kind of put pets under our umbrella as well, because so many of the things we've done to save children are good for them. You know, one of our accomplishments is safer power window switches, where it used to be kind of a rocker or a toggle switch. Now you have to scoop underneath to put it up and push down for it to go down. Because you know how dogs like to put their little head out the window and get the air? They could put their paw on that rocker switch, it would go up very quickly with a lot of force, and they would be killed. Same with children.
That's true. Wow. It,
we're just, you know, trying to, like I said, make that environment safer.
Yeah, for good on you. You've done so much. Have you heard from any families where a child has been in the car and they've been able to get out as a result of your efforts?
Yes, we had happy news. I've got a little note from a boy who was saved from dying in the trunk of a car because he found the little glow-in-the-dark release. But when they have a close call, I think very many people don't understand that any safety feature you have in your vehicle that just saved your life is the work of many safety advocates pounding for years and years and years and years. Things like seatbelts, things like airbags. You think, oh, well, that's the government made everyone do that. Oh, no, no, it's the safety advocates that made the government do that. A cadre of people that I'm very privileged to work with that have been in this realm for many more years than I have. And I can almost pinpoint where and when those safety features were added, and I might say by who.
That's amazing. So can I just ask quickly, from the time that your trauma had happened to when you had those toggles installed in cars, how many years had gone by?
You mean the trunk releases?
Yeah.
Well, that one actually, believe it or not, happened relatively quickly. We got that done in just under 4 years.
Oh, wow. We can all thank your organization for that.
Well, and we think that children can live and have prosperous and wonderful lives, because nobody wants a child's life to be shortened, and especially on something that's so preventable. Our program, we work on 5 different tenets, and one is the data collection or research, and that's just so important. A lot of people either don't want to do the work or don't understand that data is power. And, you know, and we also know no data, no problems. So we do data research, and then we do education and public awareness to make people aware of these dangers. Then we do some policy change, you know, making maybe a law that says you shouldn't leave a child alone in a vehicle. And then what we do, we call it engineering or product redesign. And we talked about some of those. But probably the fifth is one of the most important aspects of our work. And we call it our survivor advocacy program. And that's where we work with families who have either lost children or nearly lost children or children have been injured. And these are really the heroes in all of these stories. And, you know, we, in fact, co-authored a publication called Channeling Grief into Policy Change. And what it does is just takes you through a couple of stories where something has happened to a child, and the change the parent made could be as simple as getting a stop sign together, or it could be as notable as motorcycle helmets or something like crib safety, those type of things. So that is what that specific publication talks about. But our message, we call it our secret sauce, and it's not a secret at all. But there's so many times people in the injury prevention and, you know, the professionals that work on these issues, you know, they may go before Congress and say, if we do this, we can reduce death and injury by 17.6%. And, you know, everybody's like, well, yeah, that's great. That's a number. And then there might be a family who really is dedicated and wants to make a change and say, you must make this change. My child died, and, you know, very passionate. And then they might be overlooked because they don't have the data. So our secret sauce is putting the person who is who has the data, who has, you know, the basics that can show that there can be improvement, with the passion of the parents. And that seems to be the most dynamic way to get things done in our country. When our parents carry a picture of their child, holding it and walking through the halls of Congress and talking to Congress members. And I mean, if you can imagine, they are so selfless. I mean, how hard it is to tell the story over and over again. And in most cases, they're the person who was behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. Yet they're willing to do that because they know how that grief feels. They know what that pain is like. And that pain, you know, they may deal with it better, but it's never going to go away. So by helping and working together and educating people about these terrible tragedies, they make a huge difference. You're going to listen to a parent who, you know, is telling you exactly what happened, and they have nothing to gain to save the lives of others.
It sounds like you've assembled quite an army of people to help you in your cause.
We do. We have the best army in the whole world.
When you think back to what you've been through in your journey, how are you all doing?
We're really doing wonderfully. You know, I think of that little 9-month-old baby who could not have been here. And, you know, he went to college. He was a Division I tennis player. And, you know, he has a wonderful job. He's a great kid. My other son is a senior at NYU, and he's doing really well. And they have kind of, you know, just grown up with this story. And, you know, it's so funny because it's not even unusual for them to come home and the cameras are there and doing media interviews or something. So they've kind of rolled with the punches. But it's just, you know, that's part of their life. And, you know, they understand that it is important to take action when something bad has happened and something is wrong. We advocate for safety, but we also really reach out and try to help our survivor advocates find a message and a purpose in their lives as well. And, you know, when you lose a child, it is so senseless. But I think some of our parents have found a way to channel that grief, and it's very positive. And we're so proud of everything that they do. And it's maybe a message through your podcast and others that resilience is is possibly a way to even work through your grief.
I often say that Joe Biden, when he was campaigning, had said, because everybody knows what his personal story is, and with losing his son and his wife and his baby. And there was a quote that he said, and it was something along the lines of, the best way through grief and loss is through purpose. And I had heard that at a time when I really needed to hear that. And I thought, he's so right. When you channel your energy into something positive, it's not that you're forgetting about what you've been through. It's just you're just looking for a way to help yourself by helping others.
Yeah, and then that is powerful. And that's absolutely what you're doing. And so I don't think you should forget to pat yourself on the back every so often.
Thanks, Jeanette. I appreciate that. I throw my hat off to you. It's really phenomenal, everything that you've been through and everything you've achieved. Congratulations.
Well, the big thing we're working on now, and of course we always need help with everything, is it's called the Hot Cars Act. And what it does, because we've all heard about these terrible, terrible tragedies when children are unknowingly left alone in vehicles and they die of heat stroke, but what there's technology there. You know, think of our vehicles today and the number of reminders that we have. Put on your seatbelt. Your door is ajar. Don't leave your key in the ignition. Don't let your headlight. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But we've now put the kids in the back seat and they're rear facing, and you lose that cue. And when you're tired, which everyone who is a parent of a small child is tired, stressed, overwhelmed, our brain doesn't work as well, and autopilot can take over. So we know that this happens. In fact, we have documented since 1990, at least 993 children who have died in hot cars.
And that happens every summer, summer.
The average is about 38, but in 2018 and 2019, we lost over 50 children. That's one every week. So with the Hot Cars Act, all we're asking is for a little technology that could sense after you leave your vehicle and lock it and walk away that if there's motion in the car, you would get an alert.
Mm.
There's so many things that's good for. And as we move towards autonomous vehicles, I mean, we're going to have that ability to see if someone's in there and if they're correctly restrained before a car can take off. So that is what we're working on right now. We have been working on that, I can say, for 20 years. And we get a little bit closer and a little bit closer every time. Last year, we made it completely through the House, and it went over to the Senate. And we kind of remember everything died in the Senate last year, which our bill did as well. But like I said, we're getting ready to introduce it. And we need everybody to contact their members of Congress and say, this is for the children. This is a very inexpensive and important change we need in our vehicles, because anyone who thinks something like this could never happen to them, they're going to find out it can when it's too late. So never think that your mind can't let you down.
Well, I'll have you to thank for it. Thanks again, Jeanette, for your time.
You're more than welcome.
From a life-threatening episode that happened in her own car, she turned that into a purpose to help adults and children across North America in and around their own vehicles. Jeanette took a terrible chapter in her life and made it into an opportunity that benefits millions everywhere. To learn more about Jeanette Fennell and Kids in Cars, visit kidsandcars.org. Thanks for listening to this episode of Resilient People. Please subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review. By doing that small gesture, you'll be helping this little show a lot. And I'd love it if you'd share Resilient People with your friends and family. If you've got a way that helps you be resilient, have a story of resilience to share, or know someone who does, drop me a line, info@resilientpeople.ca. You may just hear about it on an upcoming episode. This show was created by me, Janet Fanacki, with thanks to my team at Edit Audio, editor Kanika Codrington, and producers Sophie Shin and Steph Coburn. On the next episode of Resilient People, I'll have David A. Grant, who created the online organization, the Brain Injury Hope Network. After experiencing a traumatic brain injury and wanting to connect with others who are living with the same condition, he has successfully created a large online worldwide community for brain injury survivors. That's on the next episode of Resilient People. To find more stories of resilience, go to resilientpeople.ca, where you can get information about me, the podcast, expert advice, and even purchase a resilient t-shirt. That's resilientpeople.ca. Thanks for listening to this episode. I'm Janet Fanacki. See you next time on Resilient People. Bye for now.
Divorce sucks, but it doesn't have to be all bad. Hi, I'm Leanne Townsend, a family law lawyer and partner at the law firm Brody Thorning LLP. I'm also the host of the Divorcing Well podcast. Divorcing Well aims to help provide listeners with the tools and knowledge they need to support themselves legally, financially, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. I want listeners to tune into Divorcing Well because they are looking for the knowledge and inspiration to get them through the rough days. And on the positive days, they will gain the tools that they need to heal and move through the various stages of grief that divorce can bring. Each week, I interview an expert or a guest who's been out there in the trenches going through divorce themselves, sharing their stories, their knowledge, their inspiration with listeners, so that ultimately I can help them to divorce well. You can find my podcast on all podcast platforms or visit my website at www.leannetownsend.ca.